Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is beyond wonderful to be joined once again by the fantastic Perry Goldstein. You can find her on Twitter at Perry_Goldstein. Perry, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm so happy to be back. I was sick the last time you all recorded. So it's been a minute, but I'm recovered and I'm ready to talk some Packers.
I'm excited about this one. We're going to kind of be going over players who have shown signs of progression through the course of 2024. Some players who have regressed through the course of 2024, kind of go through those. Obviously, you know, some who have stayed status quo, and then kind of tally it up at the end and see how many progressed, how many regressed, how many stayed the same. And we can kind of get a final tabulation at the end and get a better feel for it. Before we get there, what I want to ask you, Perry, is we are now a few weeks since the Packers have had their last game. This was our first Sunday without NFL football. Now that you've had a little bit of time to decompress, put the season in the rearview mirror, and just kind of take a step back from it a little bit more, is there anything you feel differently about? Better, worse, same? Like, or is it just, you know what, we're getting into the offseason, we're already looking ahead to 2025?
Definitely looking ahead. I'm not hung up on this at all. I think for better or for worse, I've had much more heartbreaking losses and much more devastating, like, teams that I felt had more potential to go further than this one. I think like my overarching sentiment since I left this one was like, this one just wasn't it. It was a good team. It was not a great team. I think a lot of this episode will be us like really dissecting that in an interesting way. But, and it doesn't mean they can't be a great team. I think a lot of the pieces here can ascend to greatness. But this team was just good. You know, they were a good NFC North team. They were a good NFC team. They were good enough to make the playoffs, but they just like weren't good enough to make it further. And that's just how the cookie crumbles some seasons. So if this is like the quote unquote disappointing season for the Packers that we get the next few years, and it's like a wild card exit, like I consider ourselves lucky. So yeah, very much looking ahead to what they need to do to build up this team for next season. Cause I think I always felt like 2025 was more of that year that things would really crescendo. So yeah, obviously some disappointments, but not so much in the same way that I have in other seasons, like 2014 and 2020 and 2021 and 2022.
The rest of our fandom, basically.
where 2016, it felt like those teams still had so much more in them. This team did what it had in them this season.
We have survived a stake through the heart in the back. we've survived everything. This was like a minor scrape, like falling off your bike. And it was just like, oh, that stings a little bit, but it's like, all right, let's just get back on the bike and we'll be fine. Like that's how this one felt. Other ones have felt like I need like 3 to 4 months to decompress from this ending. And I may never get over it. And like 2014, never going to be over it, ever going to be over it. It's going to be one that scars you for life. This is nothing like that. I'm with you. I think it's better to look forward. I'm excited about what this offseason is going to bring. This is maybe one of the most intriguing off seasons to me because it's not like they are insanely cap rich. It's not like they've got like $70 million to go spend. It's not like they have their, as of late, you know, 2 first-round picks or 2 seconds, 2/3 or some crazy draft capital. They have a pretty standard set of draft picks this year. It's not like they have these unbelievable overarching needs. Wide receiver, offensive line, pass rush, and corner stand out as the ones that you would like to add some depth competition. Or, I mean, certainly you would take a star player at any of those spots. That would be phenomenal. But you can also probably, to some extent, get by at almost all those positions, depending on how players progress through the course of this offseason and going into next year. So there's not like these screaming needs where like safety last year was just like, if they don't do something there, they literally can't field a football team. Like, it's just a very interesting offseason. Then you look at, it's not the strongest draft in the world, but it's not super weak. It's not the best free agency class ever, but there's certainly players that you could add. And how Green Bay navigates the entirety of that with like good financial flexibility, good but not great draft picks, good but not great free agent and draft classes. Like, how do they improve this team in a significant way? I think it's going to be a fun challenge for Brian Gutekunst, and really excited to see how he attacks it.
The other interesting wrinkle to this is like the Packers don't have their own free agents to bring back. I feel like every year that's what they prioritize, and they don't have that this season. So again, to your point, like it's kind of just a really unique offseason in that regard, in terms of like what we watching like expect in their like kind of offseason routine. We're like, okay, well, the routine is like they'll bring back, you know, this, and this person who are free agents this season, and then this is how much money they would have if they potentially do these contracts. Like, they don't have any of that this season. I kind of feel like, and I want your thoughts on this, that this is sort of where the kind of offseason that Goot like would thrive in, that like middle ground type of like,
this is the wheelhouse,
right? Like middle of the road decision making. Like, yes, he hit a home run last season, but he's not a home run hitting GM. He's not a slugger. He excels in that 25 to 75 draft pick area, right? He excels in the wild street free agent pickup and the you know, the second contract signing, not the big name guy. I just feel like this is like kind of his type of off season. So I'm curious to see what he does with it, but I actually feel like this might be where he makes some good moves.
You could see him coming away with like three or four doubles out of this free agency and draft class. Like, just some really, really good players that are going to add to this team, more depth, more competition. And, you know, whether or not that's enough, I think, again, a lot of it's going to be kind of what we're talking about today. Can players progress this season and get to a next level? We didn't see, well, I guess we'll find out today if we saw enough of that or not. But yeah, I think we would love to see more of it. And I think that's going to be where the real progress needs to come this upcoming season. I have a fun one for you as well before we jump into our main convo here.
Okay.
Let's say they go out and sign two pretty big free agents. And of course they go up with their first round pick, and, you know, let's just say they move up a handful of spots and get a player that they really like. All three of those, two big free agents and a big first round draft pick, can only be on one side of the ball. They go all in on one side. Would you rather have those three players, the two big free agents and the first round pick, be on the offensive side of the ball or on the defensive side of the ball?
That's a really, really interesting question. I think it's interesting because my initial gut reaction when you said that was offense. But when I think about like, they're more glaring needs, I think their more glaring needs are corner and edge. And so I think I lean defense.
I think I might lean offense. And it's a really close conversation. And of course, thankfully, they're not strictly prohibited to only addressing, you know, one or the other. Like, they can actually go out and address both. But I think to some extent, I feel like I need to see really good Jordan Love this upcoming season. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you really want to get to where you need to go, it's got to start with Jordan being pretty darn close to what we saw at the end of 2023. And if that takes a couple of pieces, whether it's on the offensive line or at wide receiver, to go and achieve that outcome, I am more fine with that. And it's in a weird way, and I don't know that I feel super convicted in this. In a weird way, I almost feel like what I saw to Jeff Hafley last year was a baseline of like, okay, even if you don't have, you know, Jair Alexander or some of these big time players, even if you don't have a premier pass rusher, he was top 10 across the board in almost every major category last year. And I feel like, and imagine if your offense was a little bit better, a little bit more consistent, you know, converting some of those third downs and maybe not putting the defense on the field quite as much. I feel like the offense might actually be able to help the defense as well. And, or imagine the offense actually goes out when they ask to receive the ball every time and puts a seven on the board or gets into some 10, 14, nothing leads where the defense not necessarily can relax, but the opposing offense becomes a lot more predictable in those scenarios. So it's close. I think it's really, really close. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here, but I think I might actually lean offense here.
It's funny because like, I think the question is like, if you trotted out this same defense or this same offense in 2025, right, which do you feel better about? And it's weird now that I'm asking it in that way. I agree with you. I'm actually a lot like where Jeff Hafley's defense ended this season. I'm a lot more comfortable with if that's who they have starting 2025 and like the way that they played, because you said it, they ended as a top 10 defense, which is wild. I'm much more confident in that side of the ball than the way that the offense looked at the end of the season. So
I will say this in that scenario, I'm going to need them, I think, to hold on to Jair Alexander. And you might just have to gamble a little bit there that he's going to play enough games for you if they're just going to go all in on offense. But outside of that, no, I agree. I mean, you have your safety room. You still have Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, Javon Bullard, and then again, pending Jair. You have your three linebackers that I think are going to be your three base linebackers in Hopper, Cooper, and Quay. And then basically your entire defensive line is back besides TJ Slayton in that scenario. Like, again, I think it's enough to get by, even if you can't address it in free agency, can't address it with a first round pick. They're still going to be able to address it the rest of the draft in that bizarro scenario. But yeah, I think I actually feel slightly more confident in the defense in that situation if they can't address it aggressively, which is weird to say.
Luckily they can.
Thankfully they can. All right, let's get to our main topic. What we're going to do today is we're going to go through only kind of core players who played in 2023 and 2024. So we're not going to be discussing the Malik Willises, the Josh Jacobs, the Xavier McKinneys, any players that were new to the team this past year, because yes, they may have made improvements from their other team, but they were on a different team prior. It's not an apples to apples comparison. So we are looking at players who are on this team in 2023, who stayed on the team in 2024, the core ones, not every single one. And then, you know, whether or not they regressed, showed signs of progress, or if they stayed status quo. And I think, Perry, there's only one player that we can start this off with, and that is Jordan Love. I'm very intrigued at your topic here with Jordan Love and what direction that you want to go in.
He's the hardest one. He's the hardest one to talk about, Andy, because I think it's a really hard season for him to judge with his injuries, with him playing and not playing and coming in and coming out and losing wide receivers and the regression of some of his wide receivers, which we'll get to. I want to say, and I know we were going to supposed to keep this short.
We're good. We can go as long as we want, Perry.
There are some aspects of Jordan's game that I think progressed, and there are some aspects of Jordan's game that I would have liked to see improve and didn't. So I think when it evens all out, I'd say status quo. And I don't say that in a bad way, right? Jordan's a very good quarterback, and he showed in 2023 a better version of himself than I think we expected. So the bar was already really high in 2024. I think he learned to throw the ball away, right? He did throw some like wonky interceptions, but like he showed a lot more control. He's really poised. He can handle the offense. He still has some interesting decision-making and I think a lot of things to work through, but I think a lot of what went wrong this season was due to his injuries and again, some like wide receiver regression. I'd still like to see him, like, I know you and I disagree in this, but I would still like to see him maybe have, you know, some of that superhero in him and some clutch. Like there's improvement, right? There's certainly improvement, but I don't know if I feel comfortable saying he regressed. He didn't have like necessarily the big game like we saw with the Lions and Dallas, but it's too much of a team sport. I don't know. I'm thinking this through as I'm talking to you, so I want to hear what you have to say. He was the toughest one of this entire list for me, because I also feel like there's a little bit of like sophomore slump in here when it comes to second-year players, especially when they set the bar really high. Like, I look at like a CJ Stroud, right, who easily had a worse season than his rookie season. But do you worry about it? Not necessarily, especially when, again, you set the bar really high. So I don't know. I put Jordan as status quo. I think I'd feel differently if he was healthy the whole season.
Here's where I'm at. To me, it was with the caveat that you can add any caveats that you want onto it, and I'm fine with it. To me, it was a pretty clear regression. And again, was that due to injuries? Yeah. Was it due to his receivers maybe not playing as well? Yeah. Was it due to, I think, maybe some of the offense just being a little bit disjointed? And I think some defenses kind of figuring out Matt LaFleur in this offense a little bit more. Yeah. Do I think it was all of that combined and just, you know, Jordan missing practice time and not getting in the rhythm with everything? Yes. I think it's all of the above. And what I saw in Jordan in training camp was a quarterback who was playing with fantastic fundamentals, who was throwing the best deep ball of his career, who looked super confident. And then, of course, you have the Philly game. And, of course, Philly threw him a couple wrinkles. There's a couple bad plays, like Luke Musgrave probably could have cut across on that interception a little bit better and made it contested or maybe not as easy as an interception. I think there's a lot of this that goes into it. But I think at the end of the day, even just from a, you know, accuracy standpoint, just from even to your point earlier where we never saw one game that was anything close to his three or four, you know, really good games from a season ago, nothing quite like that. So I think for that reason, I do have to go with regression with, again, the understanding that pin any of those things on it that you want. And I think there's an understandable reason why, but it's still at the end of the day is less than it was a season ago.
Didn't you expect a regression though?
To some extent, maybe. Although here's the thing. I expected a regression from the peak end of 2023, but I thought on the whole, because 2023 started a little bit slower and didn't have any of that same rhythm and consistency, I thought that on the totality, he could actually outperform 2023, maybe not easily, but relatively easily because of the slow start in 2023, where again, maybe it never hit those same super high notes that the end of 2023 did, but on the whole, it was going to be a little bit better. Just for grading sake here, PFF had him go in 2023 from an 83.6 to a 75.8 in 2024. So definitely a regression there. I had him at a plus 16.7 grade in 2023, a plus 7.0 grade in 2024. Again, part of that is missed time. Not playing as much is going to go into that as well. But both of them were, you know, pretty, both good grades still, like no question about it, but not quite what they were in 2023 for, again, obvious reasons.
Sure. Yeah. It's going to be a big year for him. Like, I think like year three, put it all together. And again, it's, that's why I find it really hard to judge on the health. I think when you're a young QB, to your point you made earlier, every practice rep matters. Every single minute you get out there with your young offense impacts what you do on Sunday. And you could really see it in the offense this season. So again, I think if like the offense as a whole looked great and it was very clearly Jordan who was playing poorly, I'd feel more confident in being like, Jordan regressed. Jordan yep. threw all those like really wonky, you know, or just like really terrible decision-making interceptions, and Jordan cost them games, and Jordan took really bad sacks, and you know, but his receipt, I mean, we're going to get into the receivers in a sec. Like, I have regression for a lot of them. And I think also, I mean, we don't have Matt on here, but I didn't think the offense looked nearly as like creative or rhythmic or cohesive as it did in 2023 either. And again, like Jordan's the one who's running the offense. So there is a piece of that gets put on his shoulders as well. So it's hard to judge because we don't know on any given play really sure. who's actually like, I don't want to say to blame because I don't like that word, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Are we fair going at least slight regression for Jordan for sure. here? Everything else? Okay. We'll go with that. Let's just go kind of position by position and then we'll talk through the players. Let's go running back. Really the only one to talk about here is Emmanuel Wilson. I think this is probably a fair improvement for him and progress for him. I thought he had a really nice season when given the chance.
100%. I mean, just in terms of impact and play time, like he was running back too and looked great when he did it. So yeah.
Here's the thing, like PFF, 80.0 grade in 2023, 82.9 in 2024. But the huge difference here is only 56 snaps in 2023, 274 in 2024. So a significant increase. He went from a plus 0.1 for me to a plus 3.65. And again, in large part due to the fact that he actually got opportunity. So right. Big, solid regression and a fun player this past year.
But my one thing about that though is like it doesn't always mean when you get more playtime that you play better. So the fact that like in his larger snap count, he jumped that high up in terms of how he looked just says a lot, I think, about how he was able to perform.
Let's go to wide receiver. Dobbs, Wicks, Watson, Reed, Melton. We'll just skip Malik Heath because he didn't play a ton in really either season. I think it was probably pretty status quo either way. But Dobbs, Wicks, Watson, Reed, and Melton. Let me start with this question. Is there anyone to you that was in the plus category where you're like, yes, they took a step in the right direction?
Watson, because he was on the field. And honestly, because he was the most consistent. I think we're thinking about Watson differently if he doesn't get hurt at the end of the season.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
PFF had him from a 68.2 to a 69.1. So very slight progression. I had him from a plus 1.0 to a plus 3.4. So a pretty solid progression there. So I'm cool with that. I think to me, you're 1,000,000% right. Because in the back of my mind, I'm like, he's an off injured player and now he's still an off injured player. And it's not his fault. I want to be very clear about that. But like, but I do think he did actually, when healthy, play better than what we had seen him at, certainly at least in 2023.
Yeah. Yes.
Any other wide receiver? Or sorry, you can obviously add on to that as well. But any other wide receiver that you would make an argument for?
No.
Any that you would make an argument for stayed status quo?
I think Dobbs. I think Dobbs is who Dobbs is. Dobbs is reliable. He is the guy. He is important to this offense. We've seen it when he's in and when he's out. Like, I think there's a very clear differential. I don't think he took any like ginormous steps this season, other than I think maybe you can make the argument like more so proving his value on the offense, but he is who he is. And I don't think that he made any sort of like leap to wide receiver one. I think Dobbs is a perfect wide receiver two. And I like his relationship with Love. I hope the Packers keep him if he continues to play. I don't know what's happening with his health, quite frankly. But I didn't see anything that made me say like, he looked better this season.
Yeah. PFF had a slight downgrade for him, 73.6 to 69.7. I had a 6.55 to a 3.55, so a pretty decent loss there too. I would, if I had to choose between the two, I would probably say regression quite clearly here, but I actually, on the whole, agree with you, that I believe when given the opportunity, he kind of did, he was the same player to me. I didn't think it was anything drastically different, positive or negative. Just felt like, very astute point, like Romeo's Romeo. Like it didn't feel any different to me. Even though the grades were maybe a little bit different, I didn't feel like categorically he was this different receiver in any real way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then I would say Reed as status quo, but I think you could make an argument for regression. Are you going to say regression? Are you guys ready for one last game before football season's over? It's maybe not the matchup everyone wanted, but there's still plenty of intrigue surrounding this game. Can KC three-peat? Can Saquon run his way to a Philly victory? Either way, you absolutely cannot miss out on the last football game of the season with Prize Picks, the best place to win cash while watching the big game. And here's the big thing. Prize Picks is giving away a free pick where Patrick Mahomes will only need to throw for 1 yard to win. If you're correct on at least one other stat projection, you can win real cash. And that's not even all. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. And don't forget that Prize Picks doesn't end with football season. If you think Luka or AD are going to ball out in their debuts with their new teams, make sure to get those picks in because Prize Picks is the best place to win real money all year long. This week, I'm going with Patrick Mahomes to get that one passing yard, Travis Kelce to have fewer than 61.5 receiving yards, and Devontae Smith to have more than 50.5 receiving yards. Just make sure you don't forget to download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. What are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game.
Yeah, but my regression reason for Reed is simply because his rookie season was so outstanding that you were never going to have. I mean, maybe you could say status quo for this reason as well. I was just, I think, a little disappointed. Again, it could be the argument that because the bar was so high and you went into the season being like, no, maybe you're not going to top this season, but I'd still like to see you make some kind of improvements in certain areas. And instead, I felt like he actually became a little bit more unreliable. I don't know if it was his usage or that opposing defenses kind of found a way to mitigate who he is in this offense, but I just found that there were certain games where he was like completely erased. And if he wants to be who I think he can be, he can't get completely erased in like multiple games a season.
Yeah. So where I'm at is I think we forget some of the stuff that he did unbelievably well early in the season. Like he was fantastic really early in the season for Green Bay. And then almost I felt like regressed through the course of the season. So I thought there was a clear regression from beginning of the season, Jaden, to the end of the season, Jaden. Almost kind of the opposite of last year where it was a little bit of a slower start. And then he really progressed through the course of the season. I thought kind of the seasons in total were pretty similar. So I would put it a little bit more, but I definitely thought he regressed through the course of the season. So I'd be fine with either, but the drops and the goose eggs in some of those games is definitely concerning.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not concerned though about Jaden. Right. Like I think like he comes out next year, looks like amazing and rookie season and fits into this offense perfectly. And I think you caveat these regressions or status quos for a reason, right? Everything. Yeah. It's not just like a title in a vacuum.
Totally agreed. Would we agree that Wicks and Melton both regressed?
Yeah, for different reasons. I mean, Wicks because he couldn't catch a ball and Melton because he just saw his usage drop a ton. So when you're not really on the field and you're not contributing, it's really hard to put you at anything other than that.
I'm curious if they're actually, interestingly enough, played 65 more snaps in 2024 than he did in 2023.
Melton did?
Yeah.
Wow, I feel like he was not. Okay, fine. Targets.
That probably is true. I don't have that off the top of my head. That's probably true. The other thing that I would say too is Melton was not on the team for like the first, like, I don't know, 10 weeks of the season in 2023. He was like a practice squad dude and then back of the roster. So we got a much larger helping of Melton in stronger doses through like the final part of the year where it really felt like that we were actually getting real legitimate Bo Melton snaps. Whereas this year, like, you know, middle of the season here, it's 5 snaps, 23 snaps, 9-9-2. Like there would be games where he would, you know, he went a 3-game stretch where he played, 20 snaps total. So I think it was like you would see him just disappear for games and basically not be involved at all at times. So yeah. I think that's why it kind of feels that way. I would still put regress for both of them.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, tight end. We've got Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. We don't need to go into Ben Sims or anything like that too much, but Musgrave and Kraft, I'm going to go here and then you can obviously feel free to agree or disagree. I'm going to go that Kraft was still a progression that he took still. I thought he made his huge step kind of at the end of last year. I still thought this was a step better. And then I'm going to say Luke Musgrave is just an NA. Like we didn't get a ton of Musgrave last year. We didn't get a ton of Musgrave this year. And I just think it's just an incomplete.
I'm glad you said NA. I was like, I can't grade Musgrave. He didn't play. Like he was on IR all season. Which is unfortunate because I'm excited and I want to see what he can do. I completely agree on Kraft. I think he was actually the easiest one aside from Emmanuel Wilson, but I think of like, you know, the true starters, to say, yeah, that guy progressed this season in a tangible way. And I think he's on his way to being a star.
I think so too. I'm so pumped for him. I think it would not surprise me if we saw Pro Bowl Tucker Kraft as soon as 2025. I think he's in that realm, in that category, and I'm really excited to see what he can do next year already counting down the days. Let's jump to offensive line. Tight end again was, I felt like, rather simple. This is really interesting. So we're going to go through the main five: Jenkins, Myers, Tom, Ryan, and Walker. There's nobody else really worth discussing here. So anybody, I think Sean Ryan's very clear. Took a solid step. Okay. So we're good there. Then it gets kind of interesting. Do you have a strong feel on any of the other ones?
No, when you said this, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to say on the offensive line because they're so game to game. I'm going to say, so for those listeners that don't know, my brother-in-law works in the NFL and I love talking to him. Obviously about football because this is what he does for a living. And he has a very interesting take on the Packers offensive line, which we spoke about at length this season. And he always says, you know, the Packers are talked about as having one of the best offensive lines in the league, which they do. This is not, that's just simply a fact if you look at it statistically, et cetera. But the thing about the Packers offensive line, which I say this now out loud as we're talking about this, because I think it's so astute, is that the Packers offensive line are the sum of its parts. There isn't one player that is a star. And like, I think we as Packers fans like to talk about Elgton Jenkins and like to talk about Zach Tom as guys who we believe are either stars or soon to be stars. But I don't think that anyone around the league, unless they're really offensive line people, would talk about them that way.
Totally.
And I think when one part in this whole doesn't work well, it throws everything off. And we saw it happen this season. And I just find it, again, when we are grading them individually, really hard to do that because on any given day, one of them can have a bad day. I mean, we saw Zach Tom have a bad day on the worst possible day in the playoffs, and it threw everything off. I mean, also injuries aside, right? So when your line is just a sum of its parts, does it matter if one gets better, but the guy next to him gets worse or stays the same? I don't know. I don't know how I feel about any of these guys. I have a strong opinion about Rashid Walker, but I don't know how.
What's your Walker one? I'm curious.
Oh, I don't think he's it.
Interesting. Okay.
I think, look, I'm younger probably than a lot of listeners. I've only ever seen like the highest caliber left tackle play. So I'm a very privileged NFL, you know, Packers offensive line watcher. So I think I just come from a place of like, I do not think he protects Jordan Love's blindside well enough. I also don't know if he's the kind of player who can protect Jordan Love's. Like, I think your left tackle and your quarterback need to have similar vibes. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you have to be similar players. You have to like mimic and mirror each other. And I don't think they do. Like Bach and Rogers, like they just, there was like a mind meld there, you know, like they knew each other's tendencies, and Bach could know that Rogers likes to dance and Rogers likes to get out, you know, and run, you know, and it doesn't mean that they can't get there, but I don't think that they have it.
I can tell you right now, Rashid Walker cannot get to David Bakhtiari level. That is something he
can't. No,
I'm not. No, I know what you mean. I know you mean the connection, but yes, I know exactly what you mean. But and just in general, like it's, yeah.
So I know that they have Jordan Morgan, and I'm of the opinion that if Jordan Morgan hadn't gotten hurt, he would have ended up starting the season somewhere on the line.
I think so too. I think that's for certain. I would say Rashid Walker was a slight regression for me over what he even did on the season as a whole. I think it's close. What I saw at the end of the year from Rashid, I thought was actually good in it's even not really good, but it was good in 2023. And I don't think he ever quite got back to that this season. So I would put it there. I think Myers, Jenkins, and Tom were all pretty similar to what they've been previously, unless you feel differently about one of those.
No. I mean, I think Jenkins and Tom are very, very solid offensive linemen. Like, they're very good offensive linemen. But I think who they have next to them either elevates or de-escalates them.
I always talk about a starting five offensive line like a starting five pitcher rotation in baseball. And, in baseball, you need your ace, then you need a really good number two guy, and then you need your kind of three and fours to just be solid, like 3.5 to 4.5 ERA guys that can eat innings and get you through games that are going to be, you know, you're going to be a 500 or maybe slightly above 500 pitcher. And then like your number five, you're just trying to get through, right? Like you're just trying to like get them better and get it to that point. And I feel like kind of to your point earlier, like the sum of their parts is like, they don't have an ace on this offensive line. I think they kind of have two number two guys in Jenkins and Zach Tom. They're like kind of like those number two starters. And then I think, like Ryan is like somewhere between like a probably closer to like a number four. And then I think you have Walker probably a four, between a four and a five. And then Josh Myers is more of a five for me. And like, it's not bad, right? Like you have five capable starters and you've got two number two guys, but you put the totality together and you would like to see, you know, when they had Bakhtiari, like he was your ace, right? Like he was going to be your guy. And then Corey Linsley was like an unbelievable number two. And then you could kind of keep going, you know, well after that. And then like Jenkins was their up and coming three, and you just go on, and you had this really fantastic offensive line. And then of course, you know, back in the day with Clifton and Tauscher and Wall and Rivera and Flanagan and those guys, like just studs all across. But I don't think they have that one. And I think they maybe lack some of that middle where it's probably just a little bit too many fours and fives on this line.
Offensive line is such a, like, you're only as good as your weakest link. And you just saw, I just feel like you saw it a lot this season. And some of it was really mitigated by just how good Josh Jacobs is in getting positive yardage out of nothing. And I'm not like taking away at all from what I think this offensive line did in terms of run blocking, because if there's one thing I think they improved, it was that this season. But to your point, I just, when they're not playing well, or if they're going up against a really stout pass rush, they started to fall apart a little bit. Or at least the chinks in the armor started to show. And that's why I think strongly about the Rashid Walker thing, because I think your ace like really needs to be your left tackle.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, certainly for a right-handed quarterback, that would very much be the case. But yeah, I think we kind of same for Jenkins, Myers, Tom, progress for Ryan, regression for Walker. I feel pretty good about that. Overall, let's go to the defense. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just curious what they do about Josh Myers.
I don't know what the right word is. I'm going to be disappointed. Like 5 to 6 million on a 2-year deal, something crazy where they get a really good deal for it. If it's like, you know, 2 years, 12, 2 years, 10, I can stomach that. I can understand that. I could see why they'd want to do that. Anything beyond that, I am just a very, very, very hard no. I wouldn't do even the 5 to 6 mil. And I think he probably gets a little bit more than that, quite frankly. I would much rather go and spend, like, let's even say Drew Dahlman is 13, 14 mil per year. I would rather even double what you would have to pay Drew Dahlman over a 3-year contract over what I would, you know, if you're going to pay Josh Myers 3 years, 21, and it's going to take 3 years, 42 for Dahlman, sign me up for the 3 years, 42 for Dahlman. I will pay double for the much better center.
Yeah. I mean, they did just draft like a bunch of guards this past season.
Yep.
So it's not
a good one in totality, but like, even if they decide like we want to spend money at this position and we're going to sign Myers, and especially if it's like something like if Myers goes for like 3 years, 30, like John Runyon Jr. did, and Dahlman goes for like 3 years, you know, 42, you know, somewhere in that range. And it's like a 12 mil difference, you know, 4 mil per year. I'm not going to be too pleased about that.
Yeah. We'll see.
We'll see. Let's go to the defensive line. We'll stick with the four kind of primary ones, Clark, Slayton, Brooks, and Wyatt. Anyone that you're arguing took a jump or even stayed status quo? Actually, I have a couple feels on this.
Took a jump?
Yeah. And
I think Carl Brooks did.
Really?
Interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's just like he made a few impact plays that stand out to me, but it, like as a whole, like your grades tell me otherwise. But yeah, I don't know. Do you disagree?
I would have put Brooks in a, that's funny because I look at my grades and I had Carl Brooks as a +1 last year and a +0.75 this year. So basically identical grades. Wow, PFF had him at a 69.8 down to a 61.7 this year. Almost identical snaps, 440 last year, 459 this year. So I guess you are right. My gut, I think this is one of those ones too where expectations plays a role in it. And I was really looking for a pretty solid year two jump, and I thought he was going to really kind of take off this year, and he didn't. So again, I think actually why this exercise is really fun to do and go through, because without even looking at my own damn grades, when I'm like looking at this, I would have said pretty significantly, I thought Brooks regressed, but then you kind of look at it a little bit more and you're like, actually he's probably pretty much the same player. And it feels like a regression because he didn't take the jump that we thought he was going to take.
Interesting. I think I just didn't have those expectations for him. So
see, I had like Wicks and Brooks were the like almost identical on each side of the ball, where I thought Wicks was going to take a big jump on offense. I really thought Brooks was going to take a big jump on defense, and neither did. And it was a bummer.
Okay. But
I'm okay with the same for Brooks. I'd also be, I actually think Wyatt was basically the same play. Yeah. Actually, for me, Wyatt was actually a little bit better. I don't know where PFF was on him, but my hard one
with Wyatt because was that like I was feeling like he was starting to play a lot better, and then as soon as he would start playing better, he'd get hurt. So yeah. I feel like he's gonna start to really play. I just think he's so perfect for this scheme, and he's really gonna start to. I hope he starts to jump off the page when he's like fully healthy, because you could see it, right? And then it'd be like, oh, he has a concussion, or like, oh, he's, I don't know, in a boot. And you're like, well, shoot, he just came off a really good game. So hard to really judge when you don't have, like, you can't stack those good games. It's just like a good game here and you have two games off and a good game there. But I feel strongly still about the Wyatt stock. I hope you do too.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do this year. He needs to stay healthy, stay on the field, and put a complete season together. The crazy thing of Wyatt is, you know, he played 224 snaps as a rookie, 644 in 2023, 366 only this past year, like less than 400 snaps for him on defense. Like he's just got to stay out there a little bit more. And I know he's not a great run defender, which even when he's healthy, he limits the amount of snaps that he can play. But he just has to find a way to make a little bit more of an impact. As a pass rusher, he's been pretty good throughout the entirety of his career. 48 pressures in 2023, 32 this past year, and again, very limited snaps. So yeah, I still feel good about him, but I need him to stay on the field and make a little bit more of an impact. I would say same for Slayton and regression pretty solidly for Kenny Clark.
Yeah, Kenny was the hard one. Like to watch. Not this was an easy one to answer, but a hard one to watch. What do you think it is? Do you think it's age? Do you think it's scheme? I mean, there's some guys from kind of the old regime, if you will, that really struggled with this switch.
Yeah. I think all of it. I think it's a lot of wear and tear on him. And I think he's for the first time playing a different style of defense than he's played before. I think we all kind of thought like he's still physically imposing enough, and he's like, he does everything so well, plays with good leverage, plays with good pad level. And like, he just does all those things so well that it's probably not going to matter all that much. It felt like it mattered a lot. Or he just, again, is showing age/wear and tear. I'm sure there's probably a little bit of both of it, but I'm still very hopeful that Kenny can have a much better season in 2025 than what he did in 2024. I don't think that's completely indicative of who Kenny is as a player. I did think towards the end of the year, he did start playing at times a little bit better. I thought like all of his really bad grades were pretty much week 11 and before, and then all of his really good grades for the most part were pretty much week 13 and after. But I still think it was very disappointing and certainly a regression for him very, very easily.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think we're going to get into the edge rushers now, but like, I think the whole front was a little bit disappointing.
Big time. All right. So we've got Enigbari, LVN, Brenton Cox, and Rashawn Gary at edge. We don't need to bring Preston Smith into this since he's gone anyway. All right. Who do you feel strongly about here?
Oh, no. Brenton Cox, maybe just because like didn't really play. And then he got, he got his opportunities, and I think he made some splash plays. He certainly made his name known when he got his opportunities. So I think you can pretty soundly give him that. Very Emmanuel vibes.
Yes, I would agree. I would totally agree. I would have Enigbari and Gary as regression. And then I think LVN is an interesting conversation where it's probably just the same. I think no real progress.
Yeah. Okay. LVN was so frustrating because there would be a game or two where I would be like, yeah, okay, LVN was in there like a bunch. And then there'd be a stretch of games where 90 was like barely playing and didn't do anything. And it was like, all right, well, I don't know with him.
He actually, to me, had a little bit of progress as a run defender, although PFF vehemently disagrees based on his run defense grade. But actually, to me, it was more like he was more assignment sure. he got fooled a lot in 2023 with just end arounds and staying in his spot and doing his 111th and doing what he was supposed to. And I thought he did a much better job of that. I'm not saying he's like the greatest edge setter in the world by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought there were signs of progress there. But as a pass rusher, really no legitimate signs of progress whatsoever. Well, which I mean,
there was no pass rush period.
Yeah.
So
fair point. Point taken. All right, let's talk about linebackers. Quay Walker, Eric Wilson, Isaiah McDuffie.
I want to know your grades on Quay. Quay is probably the most like controversial player on Packers internet dumb. Some people love him. Some people hate him.
Xavier McKinney loves him. I know that much. This is actually pretty interesting for Quay. Okay. So for me, Quay Walker, 2023, -2.15, 2024, -2.20, 8.05 difference. For PFF, 2023, 58.5, 2024, 57.4, like a 1.1 difference, like basically almost identical grades for actually both PFF and I in both seasons, and identical grades for like how much he was basically the same player year over year.
What's the deal?
Well, in what regard? That's a very loaded question.
So here's my thing is that I feel like, I don't know. I my eye test on Quay is right. Cause like, I know you go through, you watch like every snap and these are the grades, and I'm not disputing PFF or you on these things.
Dispute away. It's fair. It's a very fair thing to dispute.
My eye test on Quay is like, he'll have a really good game and then have two or three bonehead plays, like horrible angle missed tackles that go for like big chunk yardage that like just ruin, like just absolutely slash it, you know? And, yep. and I don't know where's the mean there, you know? Can you have a really good game, but like that one play that you really screw up, does that ruin it all? Cause like clearly the grades say yes.
Yeah. But it just ends up below average. And I think that's going to happen more often than not with inconsistency. And I'll be above and beyond that. Take the grades and throw them aside, right? I think the hardest thing for any player, and certainly for coaches, is just not knowing which player you're going to get week in and week out, or even play in and play out. Like yeah. Quay is just a true good old-fashioned wild card. On any given play, you might get an unbelievable performance and just be like, I didn't like he shouldn't be able to get there. He made an impact play, whatever the case may be. Like it could be that. And then on the next play, it might be like, does he know how to play football? Are we starting like it's like you just don't like the spectrum is extremely wide and you don't know. It's like playing Quay Walker roulette. Now, for the first time this year, I thought there was a stretch of games in the middle of the season, especially that game against San Francisco, where I thought he looked consistent, really good, really impressive. It was his best body of work over like a 3 to 4 week period that I think I have seen. So there was times where it felt like it was getting close to being unlocked. Then he gets hurt, comes back, kind of had those inconsistencies again. And listen, like you hear Brian Gutekunst and the coaching staff and Xavier McKinney talk about him, which should have far more impact than anything myself or PFF or anyone else is going to say. Like they feel very strongly about him. Xavier McKinney going as far as to saying he thinks he can be the best linebacker in football. I don't see that. I hope he's right. I would love more than anything to sit down with Xavier McKinney, whether it be on camera or off camera, and just learn what he's seen and just go through the X's and O's with me and say, this is what he did on this play. It may go unnoticed, but because he did this, it opened up everything for everyone else and they went and made the play or whatever it may be. I would love to have that conversation and see what am I missing? What can I learn from this? But he's just a very polarizing, interesting player that I think apparently one of those ones that in the organization they feel stronger about, and outside the organization, it seems like the fans and other people watching it, maybe not as much. And I think that's just kind of what it is right now, but you get these and I would argue far more often than not, like the ones that the organization seems higher on than the outside world, they usually don't turn out great, whether it's a Kevin King, a Josh Myers, we could go on and on about some of these players. It usually doesn't turn out well in the end, but I'm hopeful that I'm the one that's wrong here.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I he's a very confusing guy. I think the traits are all there, which is probably why the team is really high on him, right? I think when you have someone like that athletically gifted who has shown like the flashes, you really want to believe that if you can just get it consistently, that he's going to be amazing. Because it's true. If you can get it consistently, he would be amazing. The problem is the inconsistency. But if who he is just a really inconsistent and therefore unreliable player, I don't think that you can go with unreliable in the NFL. You just can't.
Yeah.
Especially when you draft a guy like Edgerrin Cooper, who is the complete opposite. That down in and down out is probably the most reliable guy on the field on that side of the ball right now.
From an impact play standpoint, I would agree. I think there's still some assignment things and things like that that he needs to clean up. But overall, like from making an impact down in, like even when he does the wrong things, a lot of times he can make it right, which is a pretty crazy thing to say. But yeah, he's so freaking fun to watch. And I can't wait for year two, Edgerrin Cooper. For me, Quay, Wilson, McDuffie, all same. I felt like there was, you could make an argument for, you know, progress for Wilson and McDuffie. And I wouldn't crap on it in any way. But I think for me, these were kind of the same players overall.
Yeah, no, Wilson and McDuffie are who they are. Like I think, again, it's you make that same argument. It's like, it's not good or bad. It's the Dobbs argument. It's like, you know exactly who they are and they show up exactly as who they are. Do I want to see them as much as I saw them this season? No, I don't think so. You know, like I don't really want to see like McDuffie on Saquon Barkley ever again. But that doesn't mean that I think they're bad players or that like they regressed or anything of that nature. I think they show up, to use the C word again, pretty consistently exactly who they are, and you know what to expect. You just can't expect them to excel in some of those like big high stakes moments.
Wilson and McDuffie are basically the exact type of linebackers you want as your fourth, fifth, and sixth linebackers. It's exactly what you're hoping for. They are who they are in those roles, and they play them very, very well for what they're asked to do. And that's exactly where they should be. And I think, again, pretty status quo there. The last one is really corner here because there's no safety. Zane Anderson was the only one that was carried over and he didn't play at all basically in 2023. So we just have four corners left to go over, Perry. We've got Jair Alexander, Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine, and Eric Stokes. And you are the corner connoisseur extraordinaire. So I'm going to let you lead the way here.
Okay. Easy one is, I'm sorry, but Stokes is a regression. I don't know if we're ever going to get the Stokes we thought. And I it's hard to say because it's probably the injury, but who knows. Carrington Valentine's a tougher one because I think he really came on towards the end of the season and kind of showed like the Carrington that we thought that he was. But I think overall, when you have such a good rookie season, slight regression in my opinion, but also like the expectations were high.
I would even that one out and say I thought he was pretty much the same player.
It could be even, right? Yeah. I think also even in terms of like he just wasn't asked to do as much or shouldn't have been asked to do as much if, you know, all players were playing. Keyshawn progressed in my opinion.
I agree.
I think the start of the season was rocky, but he was asked to do so much and move around and play out of position, etc. And I really think by the end of season, he was playing some really, really, really good football. Totally exceeded my expectations. I don't know what to say about Jair. I really don't. I don't know what to say about him on the field because we didn't really see him on the field. Probably a regression because he really didn't look like himself when he played. I don't know what to say about him as a locker room guy. And I don't know. I don't know.
I think we just put Jair as an NA. It's like, this is kind of the same Jair stuff that we see. There's some weird stuff that happens, whether it's coin tosses or other stuff, whether it's, you know, and then we have the injuries year in and year out. With some games, he looks still like elite Jair. Other games, he looks like, oh, he's not the same guy. I think this is just Jair 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024 for the most part. So we either say same or NA. I'm just going to put it as an NA and just kind of leave that one alone. I agree. Nixon progressed. Valentine was the same. And Stokes was a regression is, I think, what we go with there.
For sure.
So I have to count up my defensive ones really quick here. So regression was 1, 2, 3, four, and then seven. All right. So in totality, on offense, we had four players who progressed, four who regressed, five who stayed the same, one NA, which was Luke Musgrave. And then on defense, we had two who progressed, four who regressed, seven who stayed the same, and one who was an NA. In totality, we had six progressions, eight regressions, 12 players who stayed the same, two that we punted on.
I think that tracks with the outcome of the season.
Yeah, I think so too. So just to kind of recap it, Jordan Love, regression. Emmanuel Wilson, progress, or showed signs of progression. Dobbs was the same. Wicks, regression. Watson, progression. Jaden Reed, same. I'm going to do thumbs down, thumbs up, because it's easier. Bo Melton, thumbs down. Musgrave, NA. Tucker Kraft, up. Jenkins, same. Meyer, same. Tom, same. Sean Ryan, up. Rashid Walker, down. Clark, down. Slayton, Brooks, Wyatt, the same. LVN, the same. Gary and Enigbare, down. Brenton Cox, up. Walker, the same. Wilson, the same. McDuffie, the same. Jair, NA, or same if you want to. Keyshawn Nixon, up. Carrington, same. Stokes, down. You feel good about it?
I do. It's a pretty like interesting look at the season. I think it really it explains the outcome of the season, in my opinion, perfectly. Because also the only one, quite frankly, to me that really matters is the very first one.
Yeah. So in totality, the players who showing signs of progress: Emmanuel Wilson, who is a backup running back; Christian Watson, who is now hurt and out for the foreseeable future. Tucker Kraft is one that we're actually excited about. I think Sean Ryan did actually take a jump into a rotational question mark guard into a legitimate starting guard in the league, which I think is an important one for him. Brenton Cox, who went from basically redshirt season into being a rotational edge rusher. And then Keyshawn Nixon, who went from a iffy slot corner to a slightly above iffy slash good outside corner, which I think is a positive step for him as well.
Yeah, but like that's a short list.
It is. And Perry, if you would have said, I mean, how many of last year's draft picks did we have on there? None, or Kraft, right?
Yeah, Tucker.
Yeah, I think Kraft was the only one. If you would have told me that going into the season, just that group in and of itself, I would have said no chance. Like there's going to be massive signs of progress there. And we just didn't get it. I think in totality for this youngest team in football, who's supposed to be on the side of, you know, we're not talking about an overage team here that should be showing signs of regression. There's no world in which there should have been more regression candidates than progression candidates this past year. And to me, that is a problem. I don't think that there's a perfect 1A solution to it. I think the coaching's got to get better. I think they have to have a little bit more time, effort, and energy into the details and into the technical side of things. But whatever it is, they have to find a way. This is still the youngest team in football 2 years in a row. They should be green and growing. They should be on the right track. And it just felt like 2024 was a slight derailment to some extent, not a catastrophic one, not one that you can't quickly get readjusted and right back on track, but a slight at worst or at best step in the wrong direction.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's sophomore slump. Right. Learn from mistakes, and like nothing we could spend a whole nother episode looking at each of the regression candidates and like what level of that in which we are concerned. And my concern level is only high for a very small fraction of them. So I think all offseason OTAs, et cetera, there's a lot to correct. And I still feel really positive about the course correction. But it's not where I thought we'd be, to your point, coming out of this season. Even if the outcome in terms of like exiting in the wild card was the same, I think they could have exited out, had the same record, everything. But those individual guys having better seasons should be where this team is at.
Totally agreed. And it's just a disappointment in that regard. But as we always say, progression is not linear. And I actually think this is a fairly common thing, especially for a team that had sort of unexpected success in that first season with Jordan and all those young players. It is so easy to get a false sense of confidence of like, oh, this whole NFL thing is actually pretty easy. Like, I don't actually even need to do as much work as I did that first year. We got this. And then you get humbled very, very quickly. And they didn't get humbled to a real, you know, significant way or in any sort of significant way. But I think you could also tell that some of these players didn't have maybe the same attention to detail and just progress that we were expecting to see, which again, went a long way in them not maybe reaching where they wanted to reach this past season.
100%.
100%. Last but not least, Perry, Super Bowl pick. Who you got?
Ugh, the Chiefs. I say begrudgingly.
Are you cheering for the Eagles or just cheering against the Chiefs?
I'm cheering for no one. I'm cheering because I like Kendrick Lamar.
It's a good one to cheer for. I'm excited for that as well. I think it's going to be a good game. That's all I care about. Just make it close, make it entertaining, make it exciting. And then I'll kind of see how I feel throughout the game of like who I'm actually kind of cheering for. But I just at least make it a good game. We're not going to get another one of these until early September. So make it good at least.
I'd feel a little bit better if the Packers lost to the Super Bowl champions. So I wouldn't hate it if the Eagles won. But I'm pretty sick of watching. I don't know how people feel about this. You let us know. Pretty sick of watching the same teams win all the time. We get the same Super Bowl. Like, what, this happened like 2 years ago? I'm so sick of it. So, I don't know. To your point, hopefully it's a good game.
Yeah, that's the only potential saving grace here is if it's at least a very entertaining, good game throughout. But, yeah, I think everyone wanted a different flavor of something, whether that was Washington, whether that was Buffalo, just something to make it a little bit different. And unfortunately, we did not get that, and it was a bummer. But yeah. I'll take football any way I can get it. I'm excited for this regardless. And yeah, not to mention, obviously, Kendrick Lamar on top of that. So I'll take that as well. What do you got cooking on Pax, what she said, and anything else you want to talk about on the way out here, Perry?
Maggie and I will be back with our now, I guess, we're going on 5 years this month. I know. Our annual Super Bowl show where we talk about what the Super Bowl teams have that the Packers do not. So we will compare both these teams rosters and track records this season and what they do successfully with what the Packers have and kind of look at the delta between the two. It's one of my favorite episodes that we do. One day soon we won't have to do it because we'll be doing a Super Bowl preview show. But until that happens, you'll get this episode instead. Then we'll be taking a little bit of a break before free agency. Okay. And then we'll be back full swing, free agency, draft, etc.
Cannot wait. You guys are the absolute best. Excited to check that out. Yeah, Perry, thank you so much for doing this. This was a ton of fun. I think illuminating, even as we kind of look back at it. And I think waiting to do this for, you know, after a few weeks while we've had some time to kind of think on things is really, I think, kind of important. And just it was illuminating because even in, you know, some of the circumstances where I'm like, I think it was a regression. And then you kind of look at it further and you're like, oh, maybe it wasn't. So I think there's probably, it probably wasn't as bad as it felt, especially towards the end of the season, but still a lot of signs of work that needs to be done and a hopefully significant step to come in 2025 and beyond.
Exactly.
Well, we will talk to you soon. Make sure to follow Perry at Perry_Goldstein. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.